From theheart.org radio, you are listening to Click and Rub with Drs. Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein.
Well, hello, this is Eric Topol, and I'm with my colleague, friend Paul Tierstein for the Click and Rub show. This is our second episode, and this is actually going to be a particularly interesting one because we're going to be dissecting a recent article in the New Yorker in the June 1st issue by Atul Gawande, Brigham physician, a surgeon who writes for the New Yorker and many other venues like New England Journal and New York Times. In this particular piece, he entitles The Cost Conundrum and drills down on McAllen, Texas, and how there's overutilization, not just of cardiac procedures, but across the board, including home health care. And this particular article was the subject of first a urgent meeting at the White House after President Obama read the article, and then it was even cited in Obama's speech on reform of health care to the American Medical Association. So this has become a very big article in the public eye. Inside the Beltway, it's the talk of the town. So I wanted to, with that intro, get impressions from Paul. What do you think of this article?
Well, Eric, I thought we were just supposed to have a lot of fun with these conversations. This is a pretty serious discussion.
You have no choice.
This is serious, and I'm afraid it's going to engender a lot of controversy. First of all, I there's a lot of things I don't like about the article, and I do really like Atul Gawande's writings. In fact, for years, I've been using Atul's writings as part of my curriculum for our fellowship program because he writes beautifully, and he always writes about interesting subjects, you know, like...
You're taking him off the curriculum list?
No, I'm not doing that, but I think this particular article is not really a medical article. It's really a political article, and I think there's spin to it. So let me tell you what I don't like, and then I'll tell you what I do like, because I do like some things about it. Well, but the first thing I don't like is I think it's anti-doctor, Eric. I mean, I think there's an agenda here.
Is it really anti all doctors or just the ones that are, you know, there's a picture of a patient turned into an ATM machine as part of the article. Isn't it really zooming in on those doctors that are in a particular overutilization mode?
Not really. That's where I think it's gone astray, because lay people reading this are just going to think that most doctors don't care about their patients. They just see their patients as profit centers. And, Atul would say, no, he provides examples of doctors behaving well. But then he calls these examples, these doctors, deviants. He calls them positive deviants. We're supposed to learn from them. But by calling them deviants, he's implying, more than implying, that the majority are behaving pretty negatively. And Eric, I got to say,
I didn't read the majority. I read that in McAllen, Texas, which was the worst outlier in the Medicare per capita costs, that there were practices going on in that town that were not necessarily the majority of physicians in America, but in that particular location, there was overutilization of a lot of different medical things, not of course just cardiac.
Well. First of all, I agree. We agree with each other that this is not a uniform. This is not the pervasive feeling. I mean, I feel I am so fortunate. I get to interact with doctors all over the West Coast every day. I'm probably 2 to 5 docs send me angiograms, and I talk to them about specific patients. And the impression I get is that these guys are trying to do a good job.
If you just look in the cardiology world, and you know how many private practice cardiologists that have nuclear in their office, echo, and all sorts of, even CT angio in their office suites or ownership of hospitals. I mean, there's a lot of cardiologists like that. Don't you think that would be in line with some of the concerns that Gawande has raised?
No, I actually don't. I think that if you have a nuclear camera in your office, you ought to be utilizing it correctly. You ought to be utilizing it when it's medically required, when it's medically necessary.
Well, but don't you think it'd be unwittingly, you might use it a little more than you need to?
Well, I think that there's all kinds of influences, but I think that most cardiologists, in my experience, are not just trying to make money out of their patients.
With that. In fact, what I'm suggesting perhaps is that there are not most. That's the difference. There are some that might be put into
well,
that
I
category,
absolutely agree with you.
Which
yes.
is what Gawande was targeting, I thought, with the article.
Well, my main issue with the article is I think that if you read it, if you give it to your wife to read, who's not in medicine, she's going to come away and say, gee, these doctors are pretty bad. And I think most doctors are trying to do it the right thing. I'm not
so
saying they can't be.
It was politically motivated, this article.
Well, you wonder, you know. You just wonder because it's happens to come out, you know, right when Obama is putting through his agenda for health care reform, and it does, I think, undermine physicians' credibility.
But you know, Paul, the theme of it, the timing was exquisite because it's right in the middle of the midst of this whole health care reform crisis, and something has to be done and rapidly and ticking time bomb, you know. But on the other hand, we've known about regional variability for years and years. I mean, 20 years it's been documented, not just through Dartmouth. But I remember, you know, being in Ohio, Elyria, Ohio, was like the number one use of angioplasty current interventions in the United States per population. And there was a really quite an outlier. And, you know, we knew that there was perhaps more PCI than really needed to be done in that town. And so McAllen, this is just like he's a very good writer, and he spent obviously a lot of time researching and interviewing people. But the concept is nothing new, that there's a lot of variability, and on the extreme high side, that could be a problem, right?
And on the low side, too. I mean, at the extremes, it's probably something you should look into. I'm not disagreeing at all. And I think actually probably we can all learn
concept,
from it.
Paul, that, you know, there's more waste in medicine in the United States than anywhere on the planet, and that's been well documented, that outcomes aren't any better, you know, in terms of survival or not just cardiac, but, you know, across the board in medicine. There is no hint of better outcomes in this country despite multiples of more expenditures. So how do we say that, you know, low utilization is a problem? Everything in the U.S. is tilted towards heavy utilization.
Yeah, but the problem is that it's almost impossible to really accurately measure outcomes. So, you know, your argument is basically, you even says it in the article, well, you know, we're not sure these operations really make a difference anyway, so why should we even bother doing them? I mean, you know, you could just set back modern medicine by that argument, I think.
One of the things that he drilled into, which was really striking, was forget about cardiology, because I think it's much bigger, the article and McAllen and the example, than cardiology. It was home health care.
Yeah.
And home health care, he said that the physicians wanted to all be directors, medical directors, so they could get extra fees, and that some asked for tuition for their kids for college, and some even for sex.
Right,
I mean,
so,
you know, that's pretty bad stuff. I mean, I can't imagine he made that stuff up.
Well, this is really interesting, because I have a patient who's a cardiologist in McAllen who comes out to see me. And so I called him and asked him what he thought of all this. And he directed me to a few other docs who were mentioned in the article. So I got to chat with him a little bit. And what the impression I got is, first of all, there are some things about this article that were not mentioned. And one of which, by the way, is kind of interesting, is that there are a lot of patients in the cold climates that come to McAllen in the winter. And so, you know, I see these patients from Rochester where the cost is low coming to McAllen in the winter to have their health care.
Right,
and that's
right.
Not so. So the data, as usual, the data is not perfect. But Medicare is supposed to account for that. But you can imagine that is not perfectly accounted for. That wasn't mentioned. But the other thing that wasn't mentioned that I thought was fascinating was home health, because I really got the impression that there is a problem with home health. And that there are some perverse incentives. And you know what the doctors blamed it on? Fascinating. They blamed it on Medicare. They said, well, you know what the problem is, that these home health agencies in McAllen, for some reason that they couldn't explain to me, are paid more per patient in McAllen than anywhere else by Medicare. Therefore, the home health care agencies themselves, the directors or the administrators, go after the doctors and offer them all kinds of incentives, and that's what's driving up. That's what's driving up utilization. Now, of course, that's no excuse. The doctors shouldn't fall for the incentives. But it was kind of interesting that they blamed actually Medicare itself for causing this problem. So that's what I mean by certain things being really not totally explored in this article.
Well, that's true. Would you want to move to McAllen to get your health care?
I think that there are some. I'm sure there are some good doctors, very good doctors in McAllen, and I'm sure you'd be able to ferret them out. Okay. Let me ask you another part. Let me go to something else here, because one of the solutions that that Atul mentions here is to me it's like a broken record. Oh, we have to get the doctors to get with the guidelines to practice evidence-based medicine. Don't you think evidence-based medicine is overdone?
Yeah. Let's get into that. I think
it's overdone.
About that. Go ahead.
I think it's way overdone. The pendulum has swung way too far in that direction. And you know, the problem with evidence-based medicine is that there's, for the most part, for most of our decisions, there's just not any good evidence.
We just don't
have it.
In fact, that's been documented that less than half of all decisions in cardiology, which is the most evidence of, you know, randomized trials and whatnot than any field, I think, there is no real evidence. It's just opinions.
Yeah,
opinions,
even if you had randomized trials,
I couldn't agree with you more. Where does this, you know, everything evidence-based? That's really, taken to a ridiculous extreme.
If you had randomized trials for everything, you know, it's a matter of fact that the great majority of your patients would be excluded from the randomized trials.
Right.
The exclusion criteria is enormous, so your patient doesn't really apply. And, you know, this idea of guidelines, you know, 15 guys in a room voting, you know, that doesn't mean it's true.
Oh yeah, Tavix for 1 year. I got it. No, there's no data. Yeah. We just think that'll work. No, I'm with you.
Yeah.
The guidelines and expert opinions. Look at like infectious endocarditis prophylaxis and all sorts of crazy things that have come out of guidelines. So I couldn't agree with you more there. And I think that critique is leveled appropriately.
What did you think of his story? So we agree about one thing. This is good. This is unusual. What did you think of his story about his infant, his child, falling down the steps and going to the hospital where they do a CT scan? This is his own child, and there's a subdural hematoma. And they want to send the kid home, and he goes crazy and says, no, you got to keep him overnight. We got to look at him for 24 hours and observe him. He's got a subdural. And the next day, the kid is fine, and he says, well, turns out I was wrong. The doctors were right. He didn't need to be watched. Now, first of all, there's no good evidence-based medicine to really document what you're supposed to do in that situation. But I would challenge Atul Gawande. I'd say, have another child, Atul, and you know, have the infant fall down the stairs again and see if you don't do the same thing. Because, you know, to have, again, 15 guys say, well, in a room, say, well, you know, the chances of, if you watch him at home, that's good enough. You'll be able to get him to the hospital in time if anything happens. I don't think you can legislate that, and I would criticize him for that. So, so what's good out of this article? Let me tell you what I think is good.
It's getting a lot of attention, that's for sure. I've never seen an article in a magazine get this much attention.
You know, and I love it. We're talking about it at our conferences.
Standout. I mean, you can't talk to anybody in politics today working on healthcare reform who is not citing this article and quotes out of the article. And, you know, to be referenced in this big speech on healthcare reform, this was the big speech on healthcare reform, like, you know, the one in Philadelphia on race. This was, to have an emergency session of all the White House staff and aides on the basis of this article. This is pretty substantial impact.
Yeah, I know, but I'm afraid of that because I think that he's spinning the wrong place. But I think the fact that the doctors are talking about it is good, and I think there can be some. I mean, just by bringing it out in the open, I think it's going to have a little impact. So let's talk about a couple of things that I've thought of. Maybe you've thought of some things as well. These are little simple things. For example, why don't we all find out how much we're spending, how much we're costing? I don't even know. Am I a low cost provider or high cost? I don't know. Do you know?
No, and I think that a lot of the organizations that tout themselves as low-cost providers, I think that's a false premise. There are only a few that are, you know, known to make special arrangements. I mean, like in our world, cardiology, Geisinger and Intermountain, there's a couple that have done some unique things where they guarantee, you know, for the cost of, let's say, the surgery or whatever it is, that, you know, however many readmissions and however many complications they take the hit. But for the most part, I don't know that there's any particular low-cost providers or hospitals or even, physicians themselves. So that is a big issue, is, you know, show me the data. You're right.
Medicare apparently has the data, so I'd just like to know. I think it might have an impact. If I knew I was a high-cost provider, I think it might. I would think about it. I'd think about what I do more. I mean, it would be nice to know. And the other thought I have,
it's aggregated across all Medicare, you know,
exactly.
DRG, not for okay, here's cardiology, here's, you know, home health care kind of thing.
Yeah. But it'd
that's
be nice to figure
problem.
Out some
it'd,
way
it'd
of knowing.
It'd be nice if you had the data. Okay, I'm in agreement with you about that.
So the other thing we could do is, you know, I was thinking about this. We have, you know, we do M&M, of course, monthly, and we're always talking about complications at M&M. And we do get into indications, of course, because if the patient has a complication, the first thing you ask is, was that test or therapy actually indicated? But wouldn't it be interesting to, if we had part of that conference or another conference, could just be patients that didn't have complications, but you just go through algorithms of a patient problem and a gray area, not a black and white area, a nice gray area, and get differences of opinions about how what tests to order and what therapies to pursue. You know, we can call.
Well, I think that's good. You know, on an individual basis, and that's probably going to provide some important teaching lessons. But you know, on the other hand, again, in our world of cardiology. You know, we had done a study a number of years ago in a database across the country to show that, you know, most patients who are going on to intervention have no objective proof of ischemia. And then Rita Redberg from UCSF, you may have seen this paper earlier in the year in circulation. She had a similar study, of a large database that showed still today a lot of patients undergo intervention with just symptoms, no functional evidence of ischemia, nothing objective. So you would know that there's a lot out of the, you know, 1.2 million interventions being performed in coronaries, there's a fair number that wouldn't have legitimization for the procedure. Or maybe you would disagree. I don't know.
Well, I don't disagree, but I like to think that in our organization, if that's happening at Scripps, that we'd like to ferret that out. I mean, when the patients that don't get stress tests, you see, you have to be a little bit careful because, you know, if a patient comes in with an acute MI, you don't want to give them a stress test.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about acute MI. I'm talking about elective intervention.
The
patients wind up because it's easier to get a cath than it is to get an echo in some places. That they wind up in the cath lab before they've had a stress echo or any type of stress test, and their symptoms are not necessarily ironclad. Plus, I would submit that, you know, in someone's symptoms, if they're not so like rest angina, you never can tell for sure. So
this would be good. So we would be good to find patients like this, and then that it didn't have any complications. You know, actually, you could, for cardiology, you can just look at your normal cath and evaluate them, and then you can have a discussion around with your division, or if it's a community hospital, you can have a discussion amongst the practitioners, and it might actually help build a little bit of a team in the community hospitals, particularly if it was not in a punitive way, you know, if it was a kind of a supportive way. I think that'd be fun. You know, actually, I think it would be interesting to do at ACC and AHA. To have, that way you can get at the regional differences. You know, you could have a panel and present a workup and get difference of opinions about what the next test should be, and then you could have mics in the audience and people could chime in.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. You know, the RAND group in L.A., they used to go around, like they did for New York State and other areas, they would do an appropriateness review, like what you're saying. And they found, you know, quite a large proportion, 30% of operations, procedures were typically they deemed inappropriate, and then another 30% where there was marginal. And so there have been some of these, you know, formal reviews, but
that wasn't necessarily a peer
review. You're talking about peer reviews, which I think that's a very interesting concept.
One of the problems I have with appropriateness, again, is I see you state that as though the RAND findings were accurate. Like, okay, so they found 30% were inappropriate.
Somebody's got to be honest, assessment, independent, objective, whatever.
No, because they
say it's subjective. I understand.
Well, because, Eric, the truth doesn't really, no one really knows the truth. So just because the RAND guys say it's inappropriate doesn't mean that they're right. So the best example I can give you, because it's just, you know, it's just so recent, is the appropriateness for revascularization, you know, and stenting for, you know, left main was considered completely inappropriate. And, of course, that is old news, and there's a lot of data to support left main stenting now, and it's just one of many examples you can look at where they're going to get it wrong.
Right. Well, you know, look, even in Obama's speech to the AMA, he talked specifically about should a patient have a bypass surgery or a stent? Should the patient have a stent or medical therapy? I mean, he zoomed in on that in particular, which I thought was kind of interesting. There weren't that many specific medical examples. So, no, you're right. There's no question that, you know, we don't have consensus on these, and these so-called expert opinions are not necessarily, the right answer. I agree.
But if you talk about
the difference that you and I disagree, I think this was actually a really great article, and you think it was horrible. You think
I don't think it was horrible.
Anti-physician and unrealistic and horrible, you know, like a slander, right?
I think about half of it is a slander. I think some of his ideas are very good. I'm glad I read it, but I just don't want you to. I don't want people to take it as the gospel truth. That's my problem with it. I think there's an agenda here and there's a spin.
I don't mean to demean and take on the medical community and certainly not cardiology community in any way. But I do think that what Gawande, I mean, he's a physician himself. He understands. He knows what's going on. He has some insight about this, and this is not new. This has been known for 20 years about regional variability, but he, of course, did it in a clever way and by, you know, using an example, an outlier, and really drilling down on it. But I guess your point is he was too tough. Is that really you thought he was?
Well, I think that if you take the outlier, and if it's not a pervasive example, if it's just, you know, there are some outliers, there's going to be abuses, there's going to be out and out fraud in any field. But if you take that and you say it's the norm, and that's my problem with it. He's saying it's the norm, and I don't think it's the norm. I think we can all improve, we can all do better, and we can always learn, and we can learn from each other. But I don't know necessarily that the low cost provider is necessarily should be the gold standard either, because maybe they're missing things. And clearly, holding up the outlier, negative deviant, so to speak, I guess. I think that can't be held up as the norm, because then it gives you the wrong impression, and I think it gives the wrong impression of physicians, and that's my criticism of the article.
All right. Well, you know, I look at it much broader than just cardiology. I'm trying to put it in context with all my experiences over many years across medical disciplines and across the whole healthcare system, which of course doesn't work that well in this country. And I think this was an important article. And the fact that it led to controversy and led to a whole click and rub episode, that's big stuff.
Can't be bad.
We could make it to this.
Yeah.
You know it's big, right?
But, we thank him for the material.
I think that the usefulness of this is that it has brought it to the, you know, this was not an area that was getting a lot of attention as part of what's messed up about American healthcare. I think, you know, it's brought it to the forefront now. I don't know how long it'll last, and obviously the AMA, which doesn't represent all of physicians, it only has, you know, there's less physicians that are in the AMA now, 200 and some thousand physicians, than I think are on, WebMD, Medscape, or
HeartDot.org.
You know, it's not like it doesn't have the dominant group that it used to have to represent the medical community. So, you know, part of the medical community problem, unfortunately, is it has never really policed itself that well. Whether it be for the flagrant examples like, you know, the Reading case and Tenet and, you know, these sorts of things. Well, they are, again, negative outliers, but there's lesser things like that go around, and it takes a long time before they ever get right. So it's vulnerable. The medical community lets itself, you know, at times vulnerable because it's the threshold.
Well, see, this is the difference between you and I. I mean, you're going to take Reading. I know Reading very well. I was involved with that case. I know it very well, and it is a complete outlier. And those doctors, you know, were doing the wrong thing, hands down, no question about it.
Right.
But I have a lot of faith in most doctors, okay? And I actually think that it's a positive thing for this very problem. I think that given data and given a lot of different perspectives, I think that the doctors will listen to it and learn, and they'll get better about it. I don't think it has to be such a punitive, negative thing.
Here's the bottom line is I agree with you, but I don't think that's all doctors.
We can agree with that, but I think most doctors, and I think that it's a minority that abuses.
You think 99%.
Well,
I'm thinking that's a lot, much less a percent.
It may not be 99%.
But I'm not saying it's the majority by any means. I just think there's a subgroup that, you know, unfortunately are not necessarily always thinking about
patient care.
I'm not trying to make a point. I'm just agreeing with Atul Gawande that he's got his finger on the pulse of something out there, you know? What's good about this article again is it stirred it up, and I think it's good that we're discussing this, and hopefully it will be the case in communities around the country. Obviously, much broader than cardiology. Now this has been much too serious for our click and rub, I have to say. But anyway, no, it's been I've enjoyed the discussion. It's good that we disagree because then we wouldn't have much to talk about.
Agreed. We agree that we disagree on this one. You haven't been able to convince me, and vice versa. So.
But I hope I let you finish out all your points. Did you miss
much.
Anything, or
no.
do we get it all?
No, you got enough.
Okay.
I think I'm done with
Sounds
this one.
Good. Well, we'll regroup for the next episode in the near future. Thanks
okay,
very much,
thanks.
Paul.
Great. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Click and Rub with Doctors Eric Topol and Paul Tierstein on the Heart.org radio, sharing ideas and opinions with the cardiology community worldwide. Find out more on theheart.org.